This is the Primal King podcast, but first, a quick message.
Crosso Ranch has raised premium beef for 5 generations, but we've always kept it to ourselves, but not anymore. You now have the ability to get ranch-raised USDA certified beef from our mountains in Idaho delivered directly to your dinner table. Don't settle for growth hormones, steroids, or imported beef on the store shelves anymore. Go to crossomeats.com right now to place your order. Your body and your taste buds will thank you for it. Even our girls think it's really yummy.
Buy Crosso Meats. I love it.
What is up, everybody? This is the Primal King podcast, and this is episode number 77. All right, so very excited today, guys. It's actually someone who I've been trying to get on the podcast now for about a year, but schedules just haven't matched up and everything else, but very excited to be able to have this guy on now. He's leading a massive movement, just talks about a lot of stuff that are very interesting, I think, mostly to guys. But ladies, all of you out there, I think you'll appreciate this as well. So yeah, super excited. All right, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, welcome back, everybody. Very excited for my guest today. In fact, this one's been about a year in the making. This is someone who spent most of his childhood without a father figure, so he understands more than many how important that relationship is. From there, he went on to become an Iraq War veteran and now a husband and a father. What he's done over the past few years, though, has been super impressive. He authored the book Sovereignty, The Battle for Hearts and Minds of Men. His podcast, The Order of Man podcast, has been downloaded more than 20 million times. He's also helped countless men take back their place in society with his teachings and his Order of Man movement that is growing at an insane pace. I'd like to welcome on Ryan Mickler. Again, Ryan, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, brother, I'm excited about it. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I appreciate the intro too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of want to go back if it's cool with you. So you grew up, I know, just kind of reading and doing some research without a dad in the house.
Yeah.
So I guess having gone through that, did that lead you into the military then? Did you feel like you didn't have the discipline or the structure, or like, how was that kind of growing up that way?
No, I wouldn't say that. It's funny because a lot of the times we'll look back at our past experiences and think to ourselves, you know, if only I had it this way, it would be better off. I don't think that's the case. I'm pretty excited about where I am in life right now. And if you were to change one aspect of that, even for the better, let's say that I did have a hyper engaged father, my life would be completely different. It would probably still be good, but it would be completely different. And I'm very happy and satisfied with where I am. But yeah, I mean, there was challenges growing up, obviously, without a father. I didn't really know. And sometimes we don't know that our lives aren't as good or ideal maybe as they could be when we're involved, because our life is our life and we don't have any other perspective of it. But it really wasn't until I became a father for myself and a husband that I realized I don't know how to do this. And I don't have anybody to turn to that can help me with this kind of stuff. So, you know, I struggled, but to answer your question, I joined the military right out of high school. In fact, I was still in high school when I did join the National Guard with a couple other buddies from high school. We didn't really have a very clear clue on what it is we were going to be doing. I think the timeline is right after high school. I went to college for a half a semester and just realized I hated it and lost my academic scholarship because I never went to class. And that was the end of my college time. So yeah, the military did give me some purpose and direction and discipline. And there was a lot of obviously men in the military as well. So to be able to interact with high quality and high caliber men was a good thing for me.
No, it's funny because I have a very similar story. I went because I wanted to play football, right? And plus, that's just what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go to college. I mean, if you don't know what to do after high school, of course, just go and get into a bunch of debt. I actually had an academic scholarship outside of what I was doing with sports. And same idea, I got there and was just like, man, I don't want to go to class. I'm not interested in what I'm studying. So I totally get that. So you go to the military, and then where did you go after that? Did you go right into the kind of the workforce, or how did that work?
Yeah, I did odds and ends. I did pizza delivery and landscaping, and I did some electrical work, and then I got into retail, and retail management is actually a big part of my background. So I really enjoyed the retail management side of things. And then I went to, my wife and I had just gotten married. I want to say we were married for 6 months. We had just moved to Southern California from Northern Utah. And because I opened a new store down there in Southern Utah, Southern California. And within 6 months, my National Guard unit called me up and said, "Hey man, you've been activated. So we're going to Iraq." And I went to Iraq. My wife moved home to Utah. And then we realized into my deployment that we didn't want to do the retail thing anymore. Cause if I would have stayed in retail, I loved it. And in fact, there's many elements of that I still miss. But if I stayed in it, we would have had to move around a lot, which we weren't interested in. I probably would have become corporate at some point with the company I was working with. And we just weren't interested in doing that. So we took a different path.
I assume that's probably helped you though now, right? Because I know you got a lot of different gear, swag, stuff like that. Probably some stuff that carries over even to this day.
Not really, because no. With the retail management stuff, I was mostly, so I worked with Buckle. It's men, women's clothing. So a lot of sales strategies, a lot of sales.
Obviously, oh, dude, Buckle people, they come after you right when you walk in the door.
Yeah. And I had, and you know, that's both good and bad. So we had to manage that with our team members and help them figure out a way to be forward, but not annoying and not pushing too hard. You know, so I learned a lot about sales tactics, sales strategy. I enjoy the interaction with customers. The marketing side, running a business. So I learned some things, but I wouldn't say a lot of it is crossed over into like the hats that we offer or anything like that. It's different, gotcha. But it was still valuable. And there's a lot of lessons I learned that I still apply today for sure.
Nice. So you do that. And then did you get into like accounting or something? Is that what I saw somewhere or heard somewhere?
Financial planning. Financial planning. So when I was in Iraq, like I said earlier, my wife and I decided we didn't want to get back into the retail space. So I came home on a leave, and this was probably 8 months into my time in Iraq. And so I came back, and long story short, I took all of my insurance and investment study materials back to Iraq with me. And in our downtime, I studied. And then when I came home, I passed the insurance and investment exams. And I did some other odds and ends while I was trying to build up my financial planning practice. I did some heating and air and electrical and other jobs that I just didn't want to do, but it paid the bills. And then I built my financial planning practice, and I did that for about 9 years before I started Order of Man in 2015. I'm trying to think about the timeline now. It's crazy to think about these things, how fast time goes. But yeah, 2015 is when I started Order of Man.
And so one of the things that I've saw really cool just following you on social media is you'll go back and be like, you know, this is what I was doing. I was working a job, and then I would come home and I would work on the Order of Man stuff. Basically when no one had a clue what the hell this was.
Yeah.
I guess maybe for those people, because honestly, like right now, this is kind of some of the stuff that we're going through. Cause I have kind of like my quote unquote, what I do during the day, which is I get to set my own calendar, sales consulting type stuff. But we've also been building our direct to consumer meat business from our ranch here. And so a lot of days it's kind of like you work and then you work again, and then you wake up and you do that again. So maybe for the people who are trying to transition out of that 9-to-5 job into, maybe it is a passion, maybe it's a business. Like, what was that like for you going through that transition period?
It's hard. I mean, let's be honest. It's really hard. The problem with a lot of podcasts and different organizations that I've seen that teach people how to start businesses and careers and make 7 figures and live this, you know, this lavish lifestyle from their computer, their laptop. It's never been my reality. So maybe it works. I don't know. It's never worked for me. I've never heard of anybody successful working for them. Maybe I just haven't seen it. You know, for me, it was a big struggle. It was really hard because I had my financial planning practice. And what I would do is I would actually wake up 2 hours early in the morning, and I would do blog posts, and I would edit a podcast, and I would work on my website, and I would try to clean it up, and I try to work on, you know, developing our first shirt and things like that. And then I would go into work, and I'd work and do my job. And then I would come home and I'd play with the kids. I'd talk with my wife and we'd have dinner together, and then the kids eventually would go to bed. And then I would put in another 2 hours into the website, into editing more podcasts or recording late at night after I'd already worked 8 to 10 hours. So I was exhausted. I knew it wasn't going to happen that way forever. But I was willing to put forth that effort for a period of time. And that's what it takes. Everybody thinks it's going to be easy. You know, everybody thinks that it's when they get involved, that it's immediately going to turn for them and everything's going to work out the way that it should. And that just hasn't been my reality. So, it's a challenge at first, but you put forth the effort. I knew I wasn't going to have to do it forever. But you put forth that effort for a sustained period of time and you make it work. You make it happen. That's what we did.
So how did you know it was time, like to make the transition? Was it just strictly a financial deal? Like when this outpaced that, or?
I mean, that's certainly a consideration. So if you want the technicalities of it, what I would say to somebody who's considering making that change is to calculate your bare minimum monthly expenses. So let's just hypothetically say they're $3,000 a month. That's high or low, it doesn't matter. But let's just say not your expenditures, your expenses, $3,000. If you really want to make this work, go off your expenses. So what you need to do is that when you are making $3,000 in your other job, then you know you can at least cover your monthly expenses. And then the idea is that it will continue to grow and eventually you'll have a better lifestyle than you do now, or just working paycheck to paycheck. The other thing to consider is that if you're making, let's just say in your side business right now, $2,000 instead of $3,000, well, you have $1,000 deficiency. So you need to have enough money saved, set aside in your bank account until you get to the 3,000. So let's say you project that it's going to take you 12 months, and that seems long, but we'll just roll with that. 12 months to be making $3,000 a month in your business that you're starting. If you want to jump ship right now, you actually better have $12,000 in your account. You need $1,000 a month for 12 months until you get to that $3,000 point. So that's like technically that's the mathematical formula, but I waited too long actually, because I really enjoyed my financial planning practice. But I'll tell you the decision I made. I got a phone call one day from one of my clients, and I can't remember who it was, but I remember pulling out my phone and looking at the caller ID on it. And I was like, and it wasn't that person at all. It had nothing to do with that person. It was that I just didn't want to have that conversation anymore. I was just dreading talking about investments and money and retirement and debt and cash flow. And even now, as I say it, I'm like, oh, I can't, I don't even want to do it. So I knew, you know, as a fiduciary with my registered investment advisory firm that I had created roughly three years earlier, that I had not only a legal, but a moral obligation to do what was in the best interest of my clients. And the fact that I was no longer interested in it to the point where I would even consider not fielding a call from one of my clients told me that it was probably time to sell the financial planning practice. Even though I could have done it well before that day, that was the moment that I realized, yeah, it's time to pull the plug and move on.
So then the crazy thing is, though, is you just pick up and move, right? Like all the way across country. I didn't pick up and move.
It was a big change for us.
So you end up going from Utah out to Maine, right?
To Maine. Yeah. We came out for a jiu-jitsu event. It was a week-long jiu-jitsu training camp. And I fell in love with the place. I came out here to visit my friend Pete Roberts with Origin, fell in love with the place. I was sending my wife videos and pictures. I'm like, hey, check this out. And she's like, yeah, it's beautiful in Maine. It's, you know, the fall, which is the most beautiful time out here. And she's like, let's go back in the winter when it's miserable. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do that. So Pete had us come back out several months later, and my wife fell in love with it. She got a real estate agent. She's like, we can look at houses. We don't have to buy one, but we'd been considering making a move just because we had the ability financially and we weren't strapped down with a job. So we ended up finding this house and absolutely fell in love with it. It was like love at first sight. And we spent 6 months making sure the offer would go through. There was another offer and a couple of hoops and things like that to jump through, doing our planning back home, selling the practice. That's about the time I actually sold the financial planning practice fully. I sold it before, but they were paying me on a monthly or a quarterly basis, the payout. But I said, hey, I want completely out of this thing to be done with it. So we did that. We structured that. So it took about 6 months before we moved me and my wife and my four kids here to Maine. Yeah. That was so about a year and a half ago.
So when you did that, like, what was the reasoning? Because I know, like, when we ended up moving back to our ranch, and everybody listening knows that side of it, there was a lot of different things that went into it for us. Like, there was part of it to where there's a lot of weird stuff going on in the world. And it was like, you know, like, kind of living in the middle of nowhere, being more self-sufficient, like stuff like that might not be a terrible thing. I mean, were any of those things going through your mind when you made the transition?
Not really. I mean, we lived in a very conservative state in a very conservative area. My wife is third generation, born and raised in that Southern Utah Valley in which we lived. We bought her grandfather's house. It's the house that her grandfather built, and him and her grandmother lived in that house. And, you know, so there was a lot of reason for us to stay there, but we were just ready for an adventure, ready to try something different, see a different part of the country, bond together, try something new, just experience something that we hadn't experienced before. Quite frankly, like being in the middle of nowhere, and that didn't really cross our mind, because we moved from a small town to another small town. So as far as that goes, that didn't really change too much for us.
Yep. So then as you've done kind of better and better with the Order of Man, you've gotten obviously more and more exposure with it. Do you ever have like the thought, because I kind of want to dive into that stuff now, because it's just so awesome what you've been able to do in the community. And I don't even know, maybe like the attention, I guess, that you're kind of bringing to like the masculine side, because I think reasonable people would be like, we're losing it, man. we're not going in the right direction with guys. Like, you can go and see, you know, in a lot of areas to where it's like, those boys aren't men, you know? And so,
yeah.
Do you ever like, I guess, I don't know the best way to ask it, but like, is there a proper way to be like, yes, I am fit to try to help other people become a man? Like, do you ever worry about that?
I think you're alluding to imposter syndrome. Is that right?
Yeah, I hate that. But yeah, I've heard people talk about that.
I mean, is that what you're talking about? Do I ever experience or feel any of that?
Well, no,
or
more so like when you first started, were you ever like, am I equipped to do this?
I get you. No, I never felt like that, because I never positioned myself as an authority, as the expert on the matter. So I never felt like I was being a poser or I was being disingenuous. I never felt any of that. And I still don't feel that. I've never said that I'm the epitome of masculinity, that I have this stuff all figured out, that I'm better than you and you're not doing it right. The only reason I feel qualified to do this work is because I've got the time and the desire to do it. And I'm on the path myself. And that is the message I share, is I personally am on the path to becoming a better man. That is my hope and my desire. And I want guys to come with me, not follow me because I have it all figured out. Let's do this thing shoulder to shoulder and help each other on the path.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What do you think about, just because you brought it up, what do you think about imposter syndrome?
You know, I could understand why somebody, I've personally never dealt with that. I've never felt something like that. And I know a lot of people do, that they feel fake and they feel fraudulent. And I think a lot of that has to do with, well, a couple of things. Number one, they've been poked at and they've been mocked and they've been ridiculed anytime they ever even consider standing out. I mean, we learned this in basic training. Before I went to the basic training, I had the opportunity to train with some of my section in the National Guard. And we were asking, are there any tips that we need to be aware of as we go to basic training? And one of the guys said, don't stand out. Don't volunteer for anything. Don't stand out. Just get lost in the middle of the pack. And he was right, actually, for that specific scenario, is just do what you're supposed to do, get lost, be invisible. He was right. But what a horrible way to live your life. Yep. You know, but that's what we've been trained to do, is just become invisible. Don't outshine anybody. You know, I even think about that. Even if you were to go back into high school, if you ever did better on a test than even a friend, you know, he'd mock and ridicule and poke because you got a better test score than him. You know, so we've been conditioned through decades of living not to stand out. And so anytime you put yourself out there, even to the nth degree, you might feel or actually experience some sort of pushback and heartache and headache from these people who would like you to actually not do that. So I certainly understand why imposter syndrome exists. And then if you couple that with the poor performance of most people's lives, yeah, I get it. You know, a lot of guys will say, well, I'm not confident in this, or my wife doesn't believe in me. And my answer or my question is, why do you think that is? What does she actually have to believe in you about? And that's not a comfortable thought, you know, that maybe she shouldn't believe in you. Yeah. You tell me, why should she? And most people know that because they know they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're not working as hard. They get trapped in the temptations that get to them all too often. And so they're really lacking in the confidence department. And that, coupled with worrying about how people perceive you, leads to a feeling of disingenuous or imposter syndrome.
No, it makes sense. So do you, because one of the things that I wonder about is, you know, I look at maybe past generations, especially men, right? Just, it seemed like there was just a toughness and a grittiness against, you know, with them, a lot of them. And I know that's an overgeneralization, but especially a lot of the men that I grew up around, like my dad was an old school cowboy, right? Just tough as nails. He'd hop on his horse, ride all over the mountains. And then it's like, now it's like, I see kind of the generation below me that are, you know, throwing a tantrum because they got the wrong color skinny jeans or whatever. Right. So it's like, how did this happen? I know that you've dove deep into this. Like, how did we get here with kind of like the toxic masculinity and all, everything's toxic. Like, have you been able to kind of come up with like where this started maybe and how we've gotten to where we are with it?
I mean, if we wanted to get like really deep into this, we could talk about the Industrial Revolution where men were pulled from the home and they were sent to the factories and little Timmy and little Tommy learned everything about life from their mom because dad wasn't around. You know, he came home and he had dinner, but that was pretty much the extent of their interaction with dad ever.
Yeah.
And they did that, you know, for their entire childhood. And then what happened is that we, through the feminist movement, we started shipping women off to work, right? Let's get the women off to work because they need to be entering the workforce, because if they don't, then they're not as good as men, you know? And so we start shipping these women off to work. Well, what are we going to do with the kids? I got it. Let's ship them off to these little mini factories that we call schools, and we'll indoctrinate them. And what do they learn in school? How to be women, because they're taught from primarily women. So there's a lot of reasons for this. And then you couple that with the ease of modernity. It's so easy. Life is so easy. You know, people like to complain and gripe and moan and bitch about all these different things. But the reality is, like, where do you live?
Idaho.
So we're taught, we're literally across the country from each other, and we're having this conversation. Yeah. It's probably 20 degrees outside and I'm in a shirt and it's comfortable in here. Like I've got a little bit more around the midsection than I'd like because food is so abundant everywhere I turn. Food, it's like being presented to me and packaged, and it's like, here it is. You don't even have to work for it. So it's made us weak and it's made us soft, and I get it and I enjoy it. You know, I like having a truck so I can get from point A to point B faster. I like being warm in my house and not freezing my balls off trying to figure out how I'm going to live. Like, I like that stuff. Yet, if we don't place ourselves under some sort of voluntary hardship, then we are going to become weak and pathetic and cowardly. And that is why we see this in so many men, because they're not embracing the struggles that were thrust upon us 100 years ago. They're just not today.
Right. Well, and I always find it wild too, right? Because like I went through 75 hard and then recently went through the phase one of it. And then, and there was the same thought that was going through my mind is like, how easy do we have it that I'm doing this crazy stuff to like intentionally make my life hard, right? Like, like we're pretty much really like the last few decades, I guess, are the first couple of generations to where like things are just easy. You can get from point A to point B in no time. You can hop on a plane and I could be out to your place by tonight, right? Like it's insane. And so do you see that changing though? I guess that's where I worry is like, maybe we're here
change.
Now.
Yeah, it would have changed. Yeah, because if we get too comfortable, we're going to face some sort of threat. It could be a natural disaster, an emergency, a violent encounter. And people think I'm crazy when I say this. It could be another country deciding to come to America and invade America.
Well, what would China be thinking when they watched us over the pandemic? I mean, that's it's like, if you ever want to come get us, I mean, right now's the time.
Right. You have economic instability and chaos. I mean, look at Texas. You know, what was it? 3-4 million people without power. And even look at natural disasters and how quickly civilization just goes by the wayside. So look, it's going to change.
Yep.
It's going to change. The question is it going to be what I said earlier, thrust upon us in a violent and tragic and horrific situation? Or are we willing to get out ahead of it and do something about it now? Because the warning signs are there. It's all there. You can see it all. And yet too often we as men, we wait, you know, we wait until our wife tells us she wants a divorce to tell her how much she means to us. We wait until we get diagnosed with disability, diabetes until we, you know, get into the gym and start working out. We wait until a bankruptcy to start getting our financial affairs in order. All the warning signs are there. And yet we're so lazy. We're so slothful that we just won't take care of it now. And my fear is it's going to be way worse than it needs to be because we aren't willing to address it up front ahead of time and plan and prepare for these situations that inevitably come up.
So what do you think? Because one of the things that I always wonder about is like gender roles, right? And I know that that's probably like taboo to even talk about these days, but I remember
what gender roles,
like gender roles, like, you know, like what maybe men are supposed to quote unquote do.
Oh, got it.
Versus
right.
Women,
okay.
Right.
Yeah. So, people are offended about everything. So yeah. that doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
But even like when my wife decided to stay home, like I could feel some people like judging it. It was like, well, he must make so much money that she can afford to stay home. Right.
Or awesome. Cool. What a great thing.
That's what you would hope the reaction would be. Right.
Yeah.
So, but then it makes me wonder because then I always wonder like, you know, my wife, did she feel guilty that she got to stay home and be with our kids? Because for me, that was a great day. You know, she had an awesome job. She was an HR VP of HR of a credit union. Like, people would love that job, but she was like, no, I'm good. I want to stay home with our kids. And so do you worry that like, because of some of the blowback and stuff, and I guess maybe it goes back to what you're talking about with the haters and imposter type stuff, but like, do you worry that that actually keeps people from wanting to live more of a simple, like fulfilled life because they're worried about some of the social norms and what people are telling them to do?
I don't think they're worried about social norms. I think they're worried about, maybe this is more foundational. I think they're more worried about how people will perceive them.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's what you're saying, the social norms. I do think it's an issue. You know, I take issue with the fact that much of society has tried to, or at least attempted to, and succeeded in a lot of ways, convince women that in order to be equal, they need to go out into the workforce and they need to do everything that men were doing. Now, if a woman decides she wants to do that, I say all the power to her. I think that's a great thing. But to even allude to the fact that my wife is somehow inferior to me because she stays at home and takes care of the house and prepares and cooks meals and makes the house a home and teaches our children through homeschooling, to even conceive that she may be less valuable than me to our relationship is idiotic. It's moronic and it's actually dangerous. So yeah, I think we need to be very careful of living by other people's standards, especially when those standards are ignorant at best, they're misguided, and they might be devious.
What do you mean by that? Like devious from like a feminist movement side or?
No, I mean that I think there's a lot of people who love power, who will do anything to keep the power, who will misconstrue the facts. They'll lie about issues at hand, societal issues at hand. They'll attempt to undermine our God-given rights as citizens of this country. And it's a threat. And they do it intentionally and deliberately to maintain and control power and authority. And that's what I mean. It's intentional.
Yep. Well, and you talked about like the Industrial Revolution and kind of pulling men out of the house. And then I think that, you know, it was even extradited when we started being like, okay, there's no man in the house or you don't have a husband or a dad for your kids. What we'll do though, is we'll give you a lot of assistance. Now that's where I think it's such a gray area though, because there are certain circumstances where I think any rational and empathetic human being would be like, yes, let's help the single mother with the kids that can't feed her kids.
Right.
But when you also start essentially substituting a man, and it's not just the woman's fault, the men, you know, they shouldn't be leaving, obviously. To me, that's almost been a bigger thing because now it's like, we don't need a man in the house. right? Like we don't need you. Like we can get by without you. Do you have men that you work with that maybe feel like, hey, like, man, I'm trying, but my wife is like, hey, I'm good without you. Like everybody's told me that I'll be good without you. And so they almost feel like they've lost their value in the home.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they've experienced that, but that's probably the wrong woman. And, you know, that's easy to say. And once you commit to her, I think you have a responsibility to do everything you can to make it work. But yeah, I do think that there's a problem with the government coming in and being quote unquote daddy. You know how it used to be and how it should be when people needed assistance? They went to their family members first, then they went to their church congregation, then they went to their, for women, it was, you know, their sewing club or whatever. And men was their, maybe it was a Bible study or whatever. Like we went to our things, to our small communities, and we worked with those people because we knew those individuals intimately. We're intimately familiar and connected with them. And so, but look at these COVID restrictions. What has it done? It's stripped away small business. And then you see what's happening in society with the undermining of the father. You know, more and more, I think I read a statistic that one, I don't even want to quote it because I might be way off now. I'll just say it this way because I don't want to misquote, but the amount of kids that are growing up without fathers is staggering, and it's heartbreaking and it's tragic. Not even not dad. I'm talking no dad, no stepfather, no adopted father, no male presence in their life. Okay. Yeah. And then you look at with the COVID restrictions, shutting down churches, shutting down restaurants, everywhere that we would go to congregate. And that's a problem. That's where we would see the assistance. You know, in our church, for example, we pay tithing, right? I think that's a pretty broad Christian principle. You pay your tithing. And then that tithing is used not only to grow the church and the congregation, but to help out your neighbors who might not have food. And then we have the men who get together on a weekly basis, and those men will help neighbors move or bring food over. Or if a woman is pregnant or sick, then the women in the congregation will get together and bring meals over to the family. It happens at a smaller level, and it's not happening now. And so daddy's coming and said, well, that's not happening, so we'll come in and provide it for you. And I think it's done more harm than good for anybody who's ever been on this type of assistance. It's just not a good thing.
Well, and I remember my old boss used to tell me this, and he went on to make a ton of money, but he said, you know, well, yeah, when I was young, I was down in the South, and you know, we used to have this lady, she'd come check on us. Like in order to get that government check or them government benefits, they'd come. And she's like, I remember this lady yelling at my mom saying that there was too much dust in that corner. And it's like, I'm sitting there thinking like, this is like 40 years ago. So not 100 years ago, not in the old days, right? It's like someone, if you wanted assistance, would come and be like, hey, are you doing everything you can to provide for yourself first? And if you are, then yes, we'll go ahead and help you. And the right. thing is it's kind of like you've talked about though, right? The further this spirals, the kind of the easier everything becomes and the more everyone feels entitled. And yeah, I mean, I have a lot of the same fears that you do, because even when it comes to men's side of this, you know, I have a Mastiff, right? You ever seen one of those Mastiffs before? Big, sure. Huge dogs.
Yeah.
So yeah. Mastiffs, they're big and they look very mean. And so what most people do is they breed them down until they are the most like gentle creatures you could ever see, because they're big and they're scary. And so it's like my Mastiff will come and he'll slobber all over you. He wouldn't bite you. He's like the nicest thing ever. And then I'm like, is it that much different with men though? Like if after generation over generation, people are told they're toxic because little boys like to fight. Like we all did it. You know, we all want to do it as boys, right? Or, you know, boys are competitive, you know, that crazy, terrible word. And I'm like, you know, it's five generations from now, are we going to be kind of like my Mastiff, to where they're just like, man, I don't give a hell what's going on. I'm just don't attack me. Like, do you ever think about those types of things?
All the time. Yeah, of course. Especially with kids of my own. You know, it's funny. This was probably about a year ago or so. I went to this small little, I guess it was longer than a year because it was a zoo and this would have been locked down a year ago. So it must've been about a year and a half ago. I went to this small little zoo in the area and my kids and I were walking around and looking at all the animals. And I walked by the lion cage and there was the most pathetic creature I had ever seen. And look, I don't know what a lion's feeling. I don't know what facial expressions a lion makes, if they make an expression about sadness at all. I don't know. Maybe it does. But the demeanor of this lion, it was just lazy and it was laying there and it just looked miserable and heartbroken because it isn't out trying to catch and kill its food, you know? And I think that's what's happening with the emasculation of men. You know, you don't have to go out and kill your own food. Like, somebody else is going to provide it for you, and they're going to put erect walls around you, and you're just supposed to sit down, shut up, be quiet, color within the lines, do what you're told like a good little boy does. And it's a problem. It's a problem. You know, you went back and you were talking about grit and toughness and resiliency of men 100 years ago, and you said this is a broad generalization. It's not a generalization. Yeah. Look at testosterone rates between men today. Here's a silly one you could look at. Grip strength. Our grip strength has greatly decreased and diminished relative to what it was 100 years ago. These are all indicators that we are becoming mentally, emotionally, and physically weaker than our predecessors.
Well, I'm sure you saw me laughing because when you were talking about grip strength, I just get the, you know, the guy that shakes your hand like
the cold
like,
fish. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the cold fish hand. It's, oh gosh, it drives me nuts. And then I'm like, but then that's the thing that I struggle with, because then I sit there and it's like, am I some weird old school freaking hick from the sticks that thinks a man should shake your hand with a little bit of grit on it, right? And look you in the eye. But then it's like, no, like, I think that's the way men are kind of supposed to be. But again, like, you get so much jumbled up stuff anymore. You like, do you ever think like, man, maybe I am crazy. Maybe a man isn't supposed to be like, I don't know. It's kind of weird when you see this propaganda so much, and maybe you don't see it as much as I do, or maybe other people and stuff, because you're probably surrounded by more men than what a lot of us are, I guess, with your groups and stuff. But it's like, sometimes
I'll tell you this, I see it because I'm immersed in the world. So I need to see it. Right. So I see it. I see what's out there, but I've never, ever, ever once, and I never will think that I'm wrong about it. Like, I've never thought, oh, maybe we shouldn't be as masculine as I'm trying to be. Maybe me trying to be a better man and trying to get physically stronger and a more emotionally resilient, maybe I'm just wearing the quote unquote mask of masculinity. Hell no. I've never once thought that. And I never will, because I've seen it and I've personally experienced it for myself and thousands of men who we've helped, who, as they step into their masculinity and they get physically strong and they develop skill sets and they put information into their brain and they start acting and they have more discipline and they get rid of the temptations and the vices that they know they've been wanting to get rid of, that improves their relationship with their wife, their intimacy, their sex life. They connect with their kids, they grow their businesses, they grow their bank accounts, they lose weight, they get strong, they develop confidence. Everything that's good and everything that a man could possibly want in his life comes from him being more of a man, not less of it.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. And that's, I guess, is where it has. It's become such a crazy thing in the world to think that the things that actually fulfill a man, right, that those are so frowned upon. Now, having said that, a lot of cultures throughout history, they've always had rites of passage. Like, do you do stuff like that with your boys, or will you?
Oh, absolutely.
What's something, maybe there are men out there that's like, man, my boy needs to grow up. What do I do with him? Like, do you have an idea or maybe some recommendations for people that are looking for that?
Yeah. Let's do a little bit of history lesson just briefly. So you said throughout all of cultures in the past, there was initiations and rites of passages, and that's absolutely right. And part of what I'm just going to speak generally about how this works. The boys, the young boys, would literally be stripped away from the women of the community. No women involved whatsoever. Okay, so they're quite literally pulled away from the mothers and the women of the tribe. And then they're taken to the jungle, the forest, the desert, whatever it is. And they are given a set of instructions that they have to complete. Now, they've been prepared for this, right? So up until this point, they've seen other men go through this. Their cousins, their brothers, their fathers, and the elders are talking about these rites of passages and these initiations. And so they've been prepared for this thing. And they go out into the wilderness and they have to suffer. They have to be confronted with some sort of physical altercation and they have to emerge victorious. And if they don't, they don't pass. This is a go, no go exercise, as we would say in the military. You have to pass it. And when you pass it, there's a physical representation of what you did. Typically, it was a tattoo, a scar, circumcision, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And then, and only then, were you acknowledged and recognized by the men of the tribe as being a man, not a little boy.
Yep.
And then they go back into the community and now they're men. And we can take a lot of that, not all of it, of course, but we can take a lot of that even today. Let's take the elements and we'll break it down. You have a son, you want to initiate him. You want to give him a rite of passage. And by the way, I don't think this is one thing. I think this is a series of things. So for my family and I, we do at 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, and 18, a rite of passage each of those years, every 2 years, once they hit 8 years old. We take them away from mom, no women involved, because women, as amazing and incredible as they are, they're going to be nurturers. They're going to be in their nature. And I understand that, but that's not what we're doing right now. So you take them away. Then you present them with some sort of physical confrontation, challenge, struggle. One thing we do when they turn 8 is we take them up to this hike. That's a very challenging hike, and it has to be challenging, where they want to quit and they don't want to do it, and they do it. It has to be something they didn't think they could previously do. So we take them on this hike. We camp up there. There's conversations that take place. We talk about what makes a man a man. And I've got these in different elements. So at first it's of surface level, and then it gradually gets more complex and more elaborate as they get older. And then they have to complete a series of tasks while we do this. And then they earn something. They earn it. It's not given to them. It's not a gift. It's an acknowledgement of their effort. So when they turn 8, it's a 22 single shot rifle that is theirs. It's their gun. It's not my gun. It's their gun. And then it's what happens stays between us. You don't share it with mom. You don't share it with sister. You don't share it with anybody else. This is our thing. And you can talk with it about it with your brother, because he's been through it, but this is our thing. And then we do that, like I said, every 2 years. This is how you make boys into men. This is how we do it.
Man, I love that. That's great stuff. So I hope you guys out there listening can take some of that, because I think we need more of that. Obviously we need to start wrapping up here, but there's something else that when you were talking earlier that I would love to get your input on, because I feel like we've almost gone so far, like talking about men and you got to let your feelings out there, to where like a lot of men, it seems like, are almost emotional basket cases, just crying and everything else. And I've always kind of been like, when my dad passed away like 4 years ago, my daughter was 8 at the time. And I tried to start telling her, and in all honesty, like I just started breaking down, just tears started flowing. And my daughter started laughing at me. Swear to God, she started laughing at me, because she's like, "Dad, are you crying?" Because she'd never seen it. Yeah. But I've always, it's like, I don't ever want to be the man that's going to my wife being like, "Honey, I'm so sad." And this, you know what I mean? It's like, I feel like I kind of need to be the rock as the man. Now, I'd love to get your take on that, because I don't believe, just personally, and again, probably going to get called a caveman by some people, but it's like, I don't believe men should be emotional, crying all the time. Like they've got to be somewhat strong and resilient. Like, what are your thoughts on kind of like the emotional side of it?
So I think here's how I would make the distinction. It's okay and it's necessary for men to have emotions and to experience them. It's not okay for a man to be emotional. There's a difference. Emotional is the reaction to an emotion. Okay. Having an emotion is okay. If you're sad about your father passing, I think that's probably a pretty reasonable thing to be upset about. But there's a time and a place for you to be emotional about it. And when you're in the middle of something, or trying to lead, or trying to work on a project, or trying to communicate something to your daughter or your wife or whatever it may be, being an emotional basket case isn't going to help the cause. In fact, it's going to undermine it.
Yep.
But so what we need to do, and here's how I use or look at and frame the concept of emotions. Imagine your emotions, all of them. Happy, joy, greed, lust, pride, sadness, sorrow, misery, all the range of emotions as the dashboard on your vehicle. Okay. And the dashboard on your vehicle is just there to regulate. It's there to give you some feedback. Here's how fast you're going. Here's the oil temperature. Here's the oil pressure. Here's the fuel gauge. Here's the odometer. Here's all of the things that you need to look at to ensure the vehicle is operating properly and you're going to get from point A to point B. Now, let's say you're driving down the road and the little fuel indicator comes on that says you're low on gas. Are you going to flip out and be an emotional basket case and run people off the road and just like throw up your hands or crash into something? Like, you're not going to be reckless. you're probably going to either pull up your phone or take the next exit and go into the gas station and get some gas and then get back on the road. That's what a rational human being would do.
Yep.
Same thing with your emotions. If you're happy about something, that's not enough. Why are you happy? Like if you're just so happy at the end of the day, I think you need to go back and you need to ask yourself, what happened today where I felt that? Or if you're proud, what happened specifically today that I was proud about? Because I want to be able to replicate that. And the same thing about sorrow. For example, your father passing, and I'm sorry to hear that. My father passed 3 years ago. And so I know what that's like. So I'm upset about that. Obviously, I can be a basket case and I can leave a wake of collateral damage in my path because I'm upset about that and I'm emotional. Or I can remember that life is fragile and that we will all die and that we only get one life. And I better tell my kids and my wife and the people I care about how much I love them right now while they're still here. In other words, I can use it as fuel to produce better outcomes for my current life. And that's what emotions are there to do. I don't care if you're a creationist or an evolutionist, we would not have our emotions, the wide range of emotions, we would not have them if they weren't there to serve us. And all of them do, even the so-called negative emotions. We just need to learn how to use them to harness them effectively instead of becoming emotional basket cases like so many people would have you do.
Well, and I see so many people that's what gets them into trouble, right? Their emotions. They have a situation
happen. Of
course, they
make dumb decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, I don't know. It's like, am I not emotional enough? Like, you know, I've thought that about myself because it's like, you know, should I be more emotional? Because you see stuff and it's like, men just aren't emotional enough anymore. That's the problem. They pent everything up inside and then they explode. And it's like, well, I've never exploded. Like I've never had that problem. It's just kind of like you said, I know I'm feeling a certain way, try to understand it, try to work through it, figure it out. Rather than just like going and like, I know people growing, just grab stuff and start throwing it through windows when they freak out. And it's like, man, did that really solve anything? Like maybe just take a deep breath. So no, I get it.
One of the things my wife really enjoys doing is she enjoys canning. So she'll take the vegetables that she's grown and she'll cut them, package them, can them, preserve them, all that kind of stuff. And she has this, I don't even know what it is, but it's a steamer is what it is. So she'll take a dozen or so bottles that she's put peaches in and tomatoes and green beans and pickles and all this stuff. And she'll screw the lids on, she'll put them in the steamer and then she'll put it over the stove and then it will steam, right? And the steam is what's vacuum seals the can. And on the top of the steamer, there's this little black thing and it's a valve is what
pressure valve, right?
It's a pressure valve. That's exactly right. Cause without that, she would be creating a bomb. That's what that is. That's a bomb. If the gas doesn't have anywhere to escape, it turns into a literal bomb and it will explode and destroy everything in its path. So the little valve just operates up and down based on the temperature and how it's regulating. And it just lets off a little bit of steam as necessary where it can still do its job. It's still tight enough, sealed up enough where it can do its job, but lets a little bit off so it doesn't blow up. And that's what we as men need to do. You know, you need to be compact and tight enough and have enough edge where you can get your job done because we need an edge, right? Yep. But you need a little valve and that valve could be reading or it could be jujitsu or it could be painting or walking or talking or doing this podcast. It could be any number of things, but you got to have a little valve so the pressure doesn't build and build and build and turn into a bomb.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Like seriously, we could talk about this stuff all day. I know we got to wrap it up here. So obviously you've done all the work that you've done. Obviously you've impacted probably more men than what you'll ever even know. You know, I know you talked about kind of walking beside men, but you are a leader. Maybe it's a reluctant hero, whatever, but you are, you're leading a movement and it's awesome. I want to commend you for that.
Thank you.
Having said that, you know, we talk a lot about kind of the three pillars, you know, liberation, the mindset shifts, lifestyle, kind of making sure you're living the life that you want to, but the last one is legacy. And so I would ask, at least up to this point, you know, with everything you've done, the experiences, the men that you've impacted, you know, if it were all to come to an end, what would you say you would want the legacy of Ryan Mickler to be?
I would just want people to look at me as at, whether it's my kids or my wife or people who follow along with what we do, and just say, you know, Ryan had the balls to try the things that came to his mind. That's it. Not that all of them worked, you know, not that everything went 100% or that he was the best or the greatest or the wealthiest or the best looking or whatever. None of that. But that if he had something that he felt was worthy of pursuit, then he was willing to get his ass in the game and willing to try it, willing to put it on the line, willing to make the sacrifices to just see where it goes. And I feel, as a believer, I feel like when I have ideas and I have thoughts and I have things that I think are good ideas or inspired ideas, that I owe it to my creator to at least try it. Otherwise, it's a slap in the face to him. So if you have an idea, and I'm not saying act on every idea, of course, please don't miss it, because I have some ideas that I probably shouldn't act on because they would be immoral, unethical, and illegal and get people hurt. So that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if it's a good idea, if you feel it's worthy of pursuit, then you have a moral obligation to pursue it. And that's what I want to be remembered for.
That's awesome. No, that's great stuff. So obviously you're big on social media. If people want to come and find you, the book's pretty much everywhere, right? Anywhere you can order a book from.
Wherever you get a book. Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah. Social media, Instagram is where I'm most active, at Ryan Mickler. We've got the Order of Man YouTube channel and then the Order of Man podcast. So between Ryan Mickler on Instagram, Order of Man on YouTube and the podcast, you'll find everything we're doing.
Perfect. And then you have it all kind of at orderofman.com too, right? Kind of.
Correct. Yep. That's our headquarters. So you can find a lot there as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, everybody. Make sure you go out, check out what Ryan's doing. He's built an awesome following, tons of good content if you guys are following him on social media. So super grateful to have you on, Ryan. Again, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There is one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.